and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, our conversations include you, and the phone lines are open. Here are the numbers. You can join us anytime during the program, 941-3689. That's 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu, that's the number to use. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Waste not, want not. Think of all the starving children in Africa. Take what you want and want what you take. Those catchphrases have been leveled at many kids over generations. But the culture of scarcity which spawned those homilies has been replaced by a consumerist attitude toward food and a lot of trash. Food waste accounts for a quarter of what goes into a landfill, and on average, 40% of the food we buy at the grocery store winds up there in that landfill. That's according to the EPA. Last week, we talked about efforts to decrease food waste on some Hawaii college campuses and through a nonprofit that redistributes still edible food from restaurants, hotels, and caterers to organizations feeding the hungry. Tonight, part two of our food waste discussion, what happens in public school cafeterias and food fights to make choices and portions healthier and more attractive so more food winds up in tummies and not trash. Joining me tonight, Mindy Jaffe is here. In 2004, she started a worm composting business out of her Waikiki studio apartment to try to introduce food waste recycling to urbanites. Waikiki Worm Company has since sold thousands of residential worm systems and taught kids how to worm in 143 schools on Oahu. She considers garbage to be our greatest resource, and her company now offers all kinds of technologies and help so that you can compost too. Debbie Milliken is the sustainability coordinator at Waikiki School and the director of the Waikiki Food Farm. That's a farm program for students in grades K through 6. She believes that environmental education for young kids is vital for the sustainability of our island state. And she has been lobbying and, pardon me, she's been studying local squid and bacteria symbiosis at UH, where she got her PhD. Brianna Rose is an environmental educator with the Greenhouse Hawaii. The Greenhouse is piloting a program called Growing Green Schools, which works to integrate waste management systems into schools. The program's primary focus is food waste and education. She also works with the Hawaii Green Growth Initiative and is a board member for Kano Hawaii. So we've got lots of experience with waste and sustainability right here tonight, and you're welcome to join the conversation at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So I guess we'll dispense with calling you Dr. Milliken and just, can we go by Debbie? Does that work?
That would be great. Thank you.
You work with Waikiki School and with kids, young kids, K through 6. And that's the age especially where we have a lot of parents say, you know, my kid's so finicky, doesn't want to eat. That's only part of the subject when you talk to them about food. There are other issues like portions, like time, all of those things. What do you see when you look into the lunchroom at Waikiki School?
Well, unfortunately, Beth Ann, I think what you need to do when you go in the lunchroom is listen. It's loud. There's kids making a lot of noise and lunch monitors trying to keep them quiet. So the environment that's going on in there is really not conducive for consuming foods. When you think about your favorite restaurant, often it's the place that you enjoy relaxing, talking with your family, maybe sharing a good story over a good meal. And I think for kids, we underestimate how important that is for them and their diet, for them to be able to enjoy good food.
And yet we make a big deal about families sitting down together and talking to each other and all of the elements and components of a good meal shared together. And we give 15 minutes to kids, roughly, you know, to sit down, chow down, and get the heck out.
Exactly. And they also have that incentive to get out because of recess. So we're finding that schools, especially those on the mainland, that are switching that and allowing the children to go outside first, really burn off that extra energy they got sitting in the classroom all day. They're often much more hungry. And you can see an increase in food consumption by, in some places, 15%. So that's pretty significant in reducing our food waste.
Brianna, you've been working with schools as well and trying to look at what do we do about all of this food waste. all those factors that we just talked about, time, the environment, portions, how much of that plays into the waste that you see going right into the trash bin?
I would say it makes a huge difference. I know working at a couple different schools this past year, we've seen about 80% of the waste actually is food waste. And every day we collect probably about 200 pounds of food. A lot of that's
200 pounds every day.
Yeah, just about. Depending on what was served for lunch, if you have a day like beef stew, for example, you're probably going to have a lot more food waste. If you have a day where it's chicken nuggets, you'll probably have a lot less. But in general, we see a lot of food waste generated.
Wow. But some of that waste, if she's lucky, winds up with some of Mindy's worms.
Yeah, and that's what's been happening recently, so it's really exciting.
I know you look at food for worms as being a good thing, but lately your worms have been getting lots of good food, especially with the USDA recommended portions and what kids are supposed to be eating that they're not. They're winding up giving your worms a great meal.
Yeah, I'm the biggest fan of the fresh fruits and vegetable program because the worms are eating better than ever. Unfortunately, their kids are not getting that food. It is going to the worms. It is going to the compost piles. They give them a whole lot of it, and they may taste it, but they don't eat it. At one point, I had a big bucket of Brussels sprouts and blackberries, very exotic worm food, but I guarantee the kids didn't eat much of that. They do get some wonderful foods. They do get introduced to foods, but the quantities are just kind of crazy. Most of that ends up in the compost heap or fattening up the worms. Worms have never had it so good. This year has been a banner year for worms.
Okay, so let's just take a look at what some of these kids eat on a daily, weekly basis. And most of the menus are the same for the purpose of this discussion. I just pulled up Mokapu Elementary Cafeteria lunch calendar. This was from March earlier this year. Fish nuggets, sloppy joes, oven-baked chicken, hamburger, breaded chicken, egg roll, pepperoni, pizza, tuna sandwich, pork or beef and beans and franks, whatever it may be. These are things that have been staples of school cafeterias for a long time. Why is it that we don't seem to get the message that maybe this is not what kids want, Debbie?
Well, yeah, I think in that case we're talking about adults that are making the decision for what kids want.
So there's no kid panel of, would you eat this? We haven't done any focus groups with kids.
Oh, no, I'm sure that there have been focus groups with kids. I believe that. But I also think that we underestimate, again, what kids really want to eat. And we see that over and over again when we work in the gardens and when they're growing their own food and when they're asking to consume them. So salads, fresh vegetables, even sautéing greens like Swiss chard and collards or broccoli. I mean, they are the ones asking to eat these foods when they see it, when they prepare it, when they're growing it. And I think what happens often is parents say, oh, my kid doesn't eat vegetables. And that child hears that. And they're the ones that are repeating that over and over saying, I know I don't eat vegetables. But it's funny because when they come out to the garden and make food, they're eating vegetables. So I know that
but isn't that because, though, they've put a little bit of sweat equity into that? It changes it a little bit when they see it growing and they've had to tend it and care for it?
It's possible. But I think also peer pressure helps a bit and them having a little bit more say in what we're preparing. But, I don't know. I think it's also in how it's being presented. So oftentimes I don't really make any statement about it, and I just sit there and we cook it and we make it and we eat it.
But it's also how you cook it, though. I mean, if it's been cooked to death and it's kind of hanging limply on your fork, it's not terribly appetizing where the color has gone to gray.
You're exactly correct. So local food, eating it fresh off the vines or off the plant is the best way to eat, especially tomatoes, and they figure that out. We did a study once where I had a class of 20 students. How many of you like tomatoes? And they were about 10 years old, 11 years old, and maybe one hand went up. And then we went out and harvested different tomatoes that we were growing. None of them were red. It was green stripe, yellow, purples, Japanese blacks. And every single student ate them and tried them all. So I don't know what it is. It's something different about it. It's not the tomato that was shipped over and it tastes like cardboard.
There's probably a whole lot of colored cellulose.
Yeah.
Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Tonight we're talking more about food waste, particularly what happens in public school cafeterias. What happens to all the food that the kids don't eat for whatever reason, either because they don't have enough time or they just don't like it, or maybe perhaps there's just too much of it. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. What happens at your child's school? And have you ever really stopped to think about all the waste and what happens to the food that kids just don't eat? What happens at the end of the day to all that food in the trash? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Lydie calling us from, not quite sure, someplace on Oahu. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you for having me on the show. My name's Lydie. Calling from the North Shore. I'm with Kokua Hawaii Foundation.
Now, we talked to you, well, not you, but to the foundation quite a while ago. I think you were doing some work with Sunset Elementary School?
We do work with Sunset Elementary. We work with a number of schools. We are all about environmental education. One of our programs is Aina in Schools, and it's a farm-to-school program, so we definitely have a lot of interest and experience with everything from school gardens, nutrition education, and waste reduction.
So what happens with all that food that the kids don't eat? Because there's still food that kids don't eat at the end of the day, even at Sunset Elementary School.
That's right. We're definitely encouraging schools more and more to take a look at that waste and, like Mindy commented, to use it as a resource, recycling it through different composting methods to make amendments for your school garden. So it's part of a whole sustainability picture where you're recycling your nutrients back into the soil for your gardens. I wanted to share that we have this farm-to-school program. It began in 2006 called Aina in Schools, and part of it includes a waste reduction curriculum, so we're helping students and teachers get familiar with different types of composting. So compost piles, worm bins, and bokashi composting. We're one of many groups that are trying to help to bring awareness to school food waste and the ability to recycle it.
Well, Lydie, thanks very much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
And if you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If your child is in a public school, do you know what happens to all the food at the end of the day, all that food that comes from the school cafeteria? Do you have a composting program at your school? Would you like to start one? We want to hear from you, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. What do you do to keep this stuff out of the landfill and back replenishing the earth, as Mindy Jaffe would like to have it done?
Absolutely. And I'd like to give a little history of how we happened to get into the schools doing waste reduction and waste management. About 2005, I think, Suzanne Jones at the City Recycling Office started a grant that was available to all teachers, public and private, any level of school, called the Recycling Teachers Partners, Teaching Partners Grant, the Recycling Teaching Partners, the RTP. The RTP was available to anyone. You just had to apply. It was $500 per school per year. And there were a number of us RTPs. Kokua Hawaii Foundation did their 3Rs program. The Greenhouse did their composting program and a bunch of other things. I came out and helped them set up their worm bin. And there was quite a bit of buzz for a number of years while this was going on because it was readily available. And it just got us our toe in the door. For $500, you couldn't do much. But a lot of the smart teachers would apply to Kokua Hawaii Foundation for an additional $1,000. So they had $1,500, which they could apply year after year. And over time, they built up some pretty good waste recycling programs. They got big commercial-sized worm bins in 36 schools, and it's no longer just a little classroom project where we have a little worm box and we do a few pounds a day. Now we're doing 100 pounds a week in worm bins. We're doing 200 pounds a day in hot composting. We're doing 200 pounds a day with the black soldier fly larvae. Because of this great little program, we were in there working everything we got in the schools, and the teachers were in control of it. It was an academic educational piece. Unfortunately, during the Carlisle administration, the budget was cut at the recycling office, and that grant was discontinued. Since then, it's been very hard for the teachers to access us. We'd like the DOE, somebody to pick this up, but it's hard for us to get in. Once we were no longer there, whoever had the funding du jour came in to do their programs, and we've had to sort of struggle to say top of mind. But that food keeps coming.
Well, that's the point.
That hundreds of pounds of food keeps coming. And luckily, we have enough of a grip in a number of schools that we're managing it. Palolo Elementary School is essentially 100% waste reduction, their food waste. Waikiki School is also 100%. Every bit of that food that is wasted in that cafeteria is turned into soil, fertilizer. In the case of Pearl City High, where we've added the black soldier fly, we're also turning food waste into animal feed and fuel, into biofuel.
Which is a very good thing, but ideally you'd like not to have that much waste in the first hand, because on one hand you want to deal with the waste because you got it coming. As you say, it's coming
at you
every day.
It keeps coming. It comes too fast and too hard and
too
much.
But the bottom line of the argument is really why we waste and why this consumerist way of looking at food, oh, it's okay, just throw it in the trash, tends to keep moving through at least, you know, 2-3 generations now, where that seems to be an okay thing just to pop it in the trash and not worry about it, because people may do it innocently thinking, well, it'll decompose, it'll be all right, but it's not going to do what happens when you actually compost.
Yeah, and the first important thing we have to do is teach separation. You know, the kids have to learn how to sort it out. And it's really sad because it's very hard for them to do that in some cases. There have been some school districts that have decided to put each little portion in a plastic cup with a lid. This drives me nuts because now you've trapped that food. And once it has come back, you can't and the kids still don't eat it. So it's not just food that we could recover and compost. It's now food trapped in a plastic that we have to throw the whole thing away. So Eva Elementary, where there's 1,000 kids, have mountains of food that's trapped in little plastic.
And that's the stuff that winds up at H-Power.
Exactly.
Or more likely the landfill.
Yeah. H-Power does not want wet waste. It just decreases their efficiency. They have to throw oil in there to get it to burn.
And that's the point. It really doesn't belong there.
Nope.
We've got several callers on the line. If you'd like to join us, better start calling now. 941-3689, 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, that's the number to call. And if you're calling us from any place else and listening to the live stream, well, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Going to Zore, calling us from the Big Island. Aloha. Thanks for your patience.
Aloha. I am a teacher from the Big Island, and I've had a garden for about 19 years. But in the Big Island, because we're rural, we have a bid with pig farmers who take what we call the slop for the pigs. So none of the food that is left over or is the cafeteria waste goes to waste. And so that's another way of working with farmers, pig farmers in particular, because that's favorite food. Another issue I wanted to talk about was having gardens in schools. Really, the previous guest talked about accessing grants, but when I first wanted to do my garden, nobody really was supportive of it, and I didn't have tools, and I didn't have money. So we just took a stick, and we took the oil, and we went to the garden, to this patch of land, and started digging with sticks, and eventually it became larger and larger.
Wow, you were really motivated. Zore, I want to tell you, we're having a little bit of difficulty hearing you. The phone line is dropping out a little bit, so excuse us for telling you thanks and having to move on. But the point being that you at least were motivated to do what you could do, and that seems to be the common thread among all of the conversations that we've had, is trying to do something and not just leave it at the status quo. We're going to move on now to Matthew, calling us from Honolulu. Matthew, thanks for your patience.
Hi. First, I want to say the idea of recycling and composting and doing as much as possible, always a great effort. I wanted to go back to the idea of reducing the amount of waste the students produce. Right now, I work at HMS as a summer program group leader. I manage the kids as they go to their various activities and also to and from lunch. And I think a major factor could to reduce the amount of waste the students produce is just simple classroom management. Like, the students have to understand that there's an expectation that, you know, the food has to be consumed. And I don't make the kids eat anything beyond, like, if they seem to sell me on the idea that they're going to be sick eating something, or certainly if they have an allergy, like, that stuff, fine. But for the most part, I just create an expectation that in order for them to get, say, their afternoon snack, which is a popsicle or an ice cream sandwich, whatever it is they're going to get, in order to get that, they have to finish their fruits and their vegetables, or at least show me that they've made a valid effort. And I've got kids, like, they really just detest the greens, but with the idea of finishing the greens guarantees them, you know, a popsicle a couple hours later, they finish them.
And okay, Matthew, can I stop you there for a second? Because, yeah. You know, I mean, I play the mom game, too, or have yeah. over many years. I mean, we all kind of get into that. If you do this, then how about if we do that? But what about the time factor? Because according to what Debbie Milliken is saying is that, you know, the time factor of and the environment in which you're eating play really
Absolutely.
Big role in how kids yeah. eat or choose not to.
Interestingly enough, I come from a military background, and that is also a function of classroom management techniques. Like, when you sort of give the students a set amount of time to accomplish tasks, like for me, we get 30 minutes, which from what I understand is sort of like an exceptional volume of time to complete lunch.
Well, I'm getting heads nodding all around the table that usually it's like half of that.
Not for me, because I made it, like, I just created a series of expectations that they had to meet. And the idea is always, if you come on strong and firm in the beginning, you can always loosen up later. But if you come in a little too loose at the beginning, you can never sort of, like, regain that ground with the students. When I came in, I sort of established myself as something of a hard bottom. But, you know, over time...
Thanks for cleaning that one up. Okay, I think we have your point that really yeah. that part of this is how a teacher sets some expectations, too.
Exactly.
But it's not going to be all of that. I mean, you're going to have... to a greater or lesser extent, depending upon what school you're talking about,
yes,
the
absolutely.
Environment, the food itself, the expectations yeah. of the teacher, what kind of carrot you're going to hang out at the end of the stick, like whether that's going to be a popsicle or whatever later on, all those things playing into it. You're lucky you also have more time than most. Matthew, thanks for the time you spent with us.
All right, thank you.
Aloha. Going now to Catherine calling us from Honolulu.
Hi, I'm just calling to talk about the federal regulations and the DOE regulations that prevent schools from making dramatic changes to portion size and food choices.
I'm really glad you called, because that's a part of the discussion I was hoping we would get into. If not with a caller, then I'm going to bring it up here, because there is a requirement, and that's making schools, causing a great deal of consternation for a lot of people.
Yeah, the Wahoo Farm to School HUE is working with the DOE and trying to make changes to that, and it's a very slow process. And
well, let's talk about what's required right now so that everybody understands what goes on a kid's plate. You have to have, what, a half a cup of fruit or vegetables?
Well, you'll find that pretty much across the board, no matter the size and age of the child, the portion size is going to be similar.
Right,
so
but
the kindergartner is going to get the same serving as a seventh grader.
Right, and that's part of the problem too. But let's just talk about that in terms of how much, you know, the volume of food that we're talking about, so that the adults who are listening can get a real idea of how much food is on a kid's plate. Debbie, you know all of these things. So it's what, about a half cup of the vegetables?
Well, maybe we'll back up. So the USDA, in order for a school lunch to be reimbursable, which means that the school will receive money from the USDA Federal School Lunch Program to cover the cost of making that, of serving that meal, you have to serve five meal components, which is the milk, a meat serving, a starch, and the fruit and the vegetable. But it turns out that the USDA actually says you only have to serve three of those five. So, okay, let's just say there's five meal components, though. That's an 8-ounce thing of milk, a pretty good chunk of meat. So if it's you mentioned the oven baked chicken, it's a whole chicken thigh with the skin on and the bones. An 8 scoop rice, I don't even know what an 8-scoop is. It's a pretty giant ice cream scooper. Mm-hmm. That 3/4 cup vegetable and a 1/2 cup of fruit.
Oh, sorry, the 1/2 cup of fruit, 3/4 cup vegetable. That's a lot for a little kid.
Yeah, it's hard to see it in those measurements. But if you can visualize the lunch tray, it is big. It is something that an adult would sit down and not be able to finish in 15 minutes, guaranteed.
Maybe you need to have that experiment with a few key adults in town.
Exactly.
So looking at a plate like that and the why of it, how can that be massaged now if only 3 of those components have to be given to a child?
Right. So then it gets a little tricky, and I think it does end up at the level of the cafeteria staff and that management, including the cashier or whoever is at the point of sale for that meal. They can become educated and familiar with the rules and decide that they do not need to make each child take a milk, for example, because that's not the requirement. Each student must take a fruit or a vegetable. That is required. So the 3 components that a child can take can be the fruit, the vegetable, and, say, the starch, which might be a fresh-baked roll or a scoop of rice. And they don't have to take the meat. Often what happens is the meat is served because most adults grew up thinking that we should eat our meat and we need our protein. And most adults think that children must drink milk. And so oftentimes those two are somewhat forced or served to each child.
Pre-plated?
And then that's the other issue. So logistically, it's difficult to allow a kindergartner, often they're 4 years old when they come in, to make a choice. And so just for timing, plating up the 5 meal components and handing them to a child, or actually plating the 4 and making them take the milk, is going to go a lot faster than asking each child, which of these would you choose?
All right. Doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of hope in the short term for some of the kids. How have you been working with the DOE to change that? I mean, we talked a little earlier with Catherine, who said, you know, they've been trying to work with the DOE and change that too, but it's very slow going.
I think so. I think what can happen, though, and this can come at the level of the community, including parents and those of your listeners, it's really asking them to make those changes, to encourage the cafeteria staff to make those changes, as far as providing each child with the choice and just providing them with those 3 meal components. Also, other options might be offering a longer meal menu cycle, so having more choices on that meal plan so that cafeteria managers can kind of shuffle things around and might be able to serve 2 types of fruit in one day, giving kids a little bit more choice, encouraging them to take more of the fruits and vegetables.
And that won't affect the waste if they have more choice?
Well, I guess it depends on how clever the cafeteria manager is, but it shouldn't.
Or doing something where they talk to the kids and the families and even ask them if this and this were offered. I mean, doing any real sort of, not quite focus group or survey work, but to find out what they might be offering that might not be as wasted as some of the other things that we see wind up in the trash on a daily basis.
Yeah, you're right. But I mean, still, I think most people enjoy eating oranges. But again, it's an entire orange that's being served.
As opposed to orange slices.
They're sliced up. But it's the entire orange that's sliced up and provided to a 4-year-old. That's a giant amount of fruit. Not many adults sit down and eat an entire orange in one sitting. But I think offering them 2 or 3 slices is sufficient. And most kids are willing to try 1 or 2 slices, but to complete that entire orange, meanwhile having this big scoop of rice that's the same size as the orange and the corn dog with the bread on it, and whatever vegetables are offered.
It's just too much in too little time.
I think it's way too much food in too little time.
And it all goes into the trash.
And then, of course, your worms get to eat it, which we talked about before. But, you know, if you have a school where you have a different situation, we want to hear from you. We don't want to paint a horrendous picture. We know there are some schools where the cafeteria manager has a different perspective, or perhaps parents have been working with the cafeteria to create better choices for kids. Some schools actually have a salad bar, too. Some schools don't have a salad bar for other reasons, because you can't control the portions and they're not sure they're going to have a kid who's going to be able to put out that 3/4 cup of vegetables, although you'd think it would be kind of tough not to with a salad bar like that. Brianna, when you talk to schools, the ones that you've talked to, do they have any more choices than what you're hearing Debbie talk about. Now, do they have salad bars? I mean, Wiley School used to have a salad bar.
Yeah, the schools that we're working with right now, we're working with Waikiki, Palolo, I mean, we're working with Academy at the Pacific. It all has really, really similar meal options, as Debbie was just talking about. Academy at the Pacific was really lucky. They were a private school, and they were able to actually have a caterer who actually made food that kids really enjoyed. And just looking between Waikiki Elementary and Palolo and Academy of the Pacific, granted, the AOP had many less students, but I saw a huge decrease in waste just because it was food that that the students actually enjoyed.
So give me an idea, because AOP obviously is not going to be in existence any longer, but
sadly enough,
as far as what kind of menus really went over well?
That's a great question. Gosh, I mean, surprisingly, curry someday, chicken. I mean, I saw like a really balanced lunch, actually, from salad to protein to things that were creative to chow mein, things that you would actually go out and order. You would actually see these students eating, and it was a portion that was doable for middle school and high school students.
And flavorful, though.
Flavorful. I actually got lunch from him. I thought it was really good. But it just shows the difference between the enjoyment of the food and how much you're actually going to waste. And you can decide. They also had options. They could decide whether they wanted a sandwich or a different kind of snacks or food. So choices were a huge, huge factor in a huge amount of food waste.
True. But that's, as you said before, easy to do when you've got a smaller school population
that
you're cooking for. When you've got a lot, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of kids that are going to come through that lunch line.
Huge hurdle, definitely.
Trying to make it happen on time so the kids get lunch in the specified time, chow down and get out is not necessarily going to mean that it's going to be the best and most, you know, visually appetizing food, let alone have a good taste to it, which, Mindy, you have said in past is part of your beef, forgive the pun, but that it just really isn't as flavorful, and the kids look at it, take a couple bites, and toss it.
Yeah. I have to say, for the thousands of post-lunch trash dumps I've witnessed, I never see kids finish a lunch. It's kind of awful food. I mean, I've eaten school lunches, and I thought, well, this would be probably appropriate if you were in prison. I mean, just pretty bland, just pretty awful food. And it's sad because a lot of these kids are on free and reduced lunch. We know they're not eating a lot else outside, and they go through the afternoon hungry. And it's heartbreaking to see. If you want a real shocking experience, go to after lunch and watch the food go right from the plate into the trash.
All right. Well, we've got several callers on the line. We're going to hear what they have to say. Sarah calling us from Mililani. Aloha, Sarah, and thanks for your patience.
Oh, I'm a healthcare provider, and I was just thinking about, you know, it's wonderful that there's recycling done, but what about the waste of food that could possibly go to other populations in the state instead of just going for composting? And then my other comment was, I see this whole food waste issue as a public health issue, and I'm wondering if another state agency might be better able to manage the portion size and the selection of food, maybe like the Department of Health or something, and then incorporate, learning about food and personal responsibility in food starting at early ages on up through the curriculum.
As opposed to letting just interested parties take this over and try to make it happen at school.
Right. I mean, trying to get the kids involved in this. Like, that is what they're doing with the farms and things like that, but also teaching them about the food and nutrition and responsibility.
So you're looking for a real serious integrated curriculum that everybody would have?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Hang on a second.
I'll leave my comment off the air because I know you have other people.
Oh, thank you. Aren't you kind? Thanks so much. But, you know, her point about, can't we redistribute some of this food so that you, Mindy, don't wind up with a whole box of apples or bananas or oranges or any of this stuff, food that, you know, hasn't even been opened in any sort of way, and yet you've been told, no, they can't.
Right. The hierarchy of food waste goes like this. First, feed people. Feed people first. Aloha Harvest does a great job in this community picking up food. I've been told by lunchroom managers that if they have a box, an entire crate, a case of bananas or oranges or apples, they have to throw it out. They cannot give it back to anybody.
For liability issues?
I have no idea. They say, we're not allowed to do that. I say, call Aloha Harvest. That's still edible food. And they say, we're not allowed to do that. We have to throw it out. So the first hierarchy is feed people first. Second on the hierarchy is feed animals. And the caller earlier had mentioned about the piggeries. All of the rural schools do have pig farmers who come to pick up the food waste. The food waste issue on Oahu is urban. Even in Kaneohe and just out in, you know, Wahiwa, there's enough pig farmers to handle much of the food waste, if not all. But the urban schools are creating huge amounts. The little ahupua'a of schools we deal with Pearl City High at the top of the hill and Lehua Elementary at the bottom, that's about as urban as it gets. There's six schools in there, and they produce 2.5 tons a day of food waste.
2.5 tons of food a day,
yeah,
from the complex.
Yeah. We're hoping by the end of next year we're able to capture all of that. But composting comes third in the hierarchy. In Hawaii, that is actually elevated for us. Nowhere else in the U.S. or very few other places can you compost all year round during the school year. On the mainland, they can't compost.
Right, because that's the flip side of the fact that we have a growing season that's so long.
Yeah, we have warm temperatures, so things break down. They break down beautifully. And we're able to manage our food waste on site, so there's no transportation costs involved. We can do small batches spread out, which is the way nature does waste management, rather than having it all picked up and taken to some central facility. That is a very unnatural situation. Even the food waste recyclers, they're picking it up, driving trucks, burning fossil fuel, tearing up the roadways.
So defeating the process. And also you're trying to replenish
soil
kind of close and to where you're composting.
Exactly. So something we're trying to do is bring on-site food recycling as a good thing. So yeah, we do have this food waste, and I have to tell you, I've given up on trying to figure out how to stop it. I'm letting other people figure that out because it just gives me too much of a heartache and a headache.
Well, somebody's got to manage it, at least in the
right.
interim.
I just look at it and go, okay, what can we do with this? And
okay,
we really want to keep the resource on campus and use it.
All right.
So it's not that bad. We do have an option.
Okay. Let's hear from some of our callers. We're going now to Janice calling us from Hawaii Kai. Aloha, Janice. Thanks for your patience.
Hi.
Hi.
My comment is that I've been in many Honolulu district schools. I work as a one direct service provider, so I'm not the teacher, but I'm working with one kid, and I'm in many classrooms. And what I found in one classroom at Jefferson Elementary School, this was several years ago, but there's a teacher named Mrs. Friedenberg, and she has the children make these fruit encyclopedias. And that involves drawing it, researching it, finding out all information about it, bringing an actual one in, and we look at it and we try it. And every kid gets an opportunity to try it. And starting with A and working all the way. And that is how the kids learn about different things and have an opportunity to decide just a little bit. Because a lot of times, when they're eating lunch, no. But when you have it as part of the, like they're saying, curriculum in the classroom.
Right, that you have a whole different and captive audience in a way where you're learning together. It's not so much, did you eat your food, bad you
exactly.
if you didn't.
Exactly. And this has worked out so interesting, I found, because there's many different kinds of kids that go to Jefferson Elementary School. And we had kids bringing in fruits that we never heard of. But yet they could bring it in and we could all learn together and find out about it. And we all got a chance to look at it for a while and then...
And then to taste it and to sort of broaden the
and
taste.
And to do a whole thing of research. Research in the library.
Right,
research
right,
on
right.
computers. I thought it was an excellent idea.
All right, Janice. Thanks so much
like
for
it.
Sharing. Well, you know, everybody has different ideas, but
yes.
if you don't at least introduce a child to something, perhaps he or she may never know, and you
yes.
never get the chance to say you like it or you don't until you try. Thanks so much
yes.
for the call.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what my mother did for a number of years until I actually decided I liked tomatoes and avocados. Going now to Seth calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Seth. Thanks again.
Yeah, hi. You know, I just wanted to call and tell all the educators and all the garden club members out there that, you know, you guys are doing great things. My wife is the garden club coordinator for Kaile Pulu Elementary School, and I volunteer out there occasionally building our garden beds and whatnot for them. And I'll tell you what, I have seen a major difference in the children out there since my wife started the garden club, and sat in on several of their lunches where they have just garden-to-table lunches, and kids that would normally never even touch a fruit and vegetable who are involved with the preparation and everything that's involved from growing it to eating it. And you know, these kids are eating these things and enjoying them and asking for seconds and going home and telling the family all about it. And it's just, it's a great thing to see. So, you know, my challenge to everybody here on Oahu and the neighbor islands is, you know, demand it. You know, it's parents, teachers, administrators, children, young adults, demand to be part of this and to get these programs implemented into your schools, because, you know,
Seth, I mean, that's all wonderful stuff. The question is, though, what's going to pay for it? How do we have the networking of perhaps nonprofits or to be able to get grants to bring in those who can do it? Because, you know, it's kind of, on one hand, they say, yeah, it's a wonderful thing and we should do it, but somebody's got to be able to pay for the necessary equipment to be able to buy some of the stuff in the first place. It's more than just that. It's the money part too. How has your wife handled that? Did the garden club get a grant?
You know, she has taken grant writing classes, and you know, that's something that educators can do. They can be an additional duty, as you know, as is.
And I can hear the groans from teachers now saying, "You want me to go and do this too?" I mean, I understand exactly where you're coming from, that you got to pick it up and do it yourself if you want to have it done. It's just kind of a shame. There were organizations that you mentioned earlier, Mindy, who were able to get grants, and schools that were able to. Hasn't been picked up so far. Have you noticed any networking among other nonprofits? Obviously, that you're involved with the Hawaii Green Growth Initiative. And that as an initiative that's sort of across a lot of different disciplines and people who are in many different walks of life, but trying to look at sustainability from the inside out, and the food and the food waste part of it is being a real component of that. Are some of these groups being able to band together to fill some of these gaps that Mindy talked about earlier without having to lay out tremendous amounts of money? Are there other ways around this to do some of what our caller was just talking about?
Yeah, I think that's definitely starting. I know working with Hawaii Green Growth, there's been a recent group of several different organizations coming together to make progress on waste, whether it's residential or in schools. So I think it's definitely percolating. I know that it's starting. I know Kupu is actually doing a lot of work on their RISE program. So I definitely see this on the horizon. So I think this kind of coordinated effort is coming about. And I really have a lot of faith it's going to be happening shortly.
And for some people who may not recognize Kupu and RISE, although we talked about it last week, the latter is the intern program with young adults and students. And the former Kupu is the organization that sort of manages that RISE program. Mm-hmm. You don't have to raise your hand, Dr. Milliken. You may speak.
Just to jump in here about the Garden School Network in the state of Hawaii and what's going on there. They just held their fifth annual school garden conference on the Big Island, and I attended, and it was well attended by over 120 people, I think. So there's a lot of emphasis being placed on learning gardens, getting them incorporated into schools. There's quite a number of schools that have hired garden educators, and they're finding ways in their budget to do so, and I applaud them. There was a recent, in the last year, the Kohala Center on the Big Island put together a school garden summary of what's going on out there, and pretty much the Big Island's beating us all.
Well, we talk to them periodically to find out about some of those programs, and we've done specific programs just how to network this through schools to be able to do it. Still means you've got to have somebody who's willing to take the reins and make it happen, and in some cases, a lot of volunteers, too. We have lots of callers on the line. If you want to join us, you better do it now. 941-3689, 941-3689, if you're on Oahu, or 877 877-941-3689, talking about food waste. How do we get more of it into, compost if it has to go there, but basically how do we circumvent this whole issue of creating so much waste and make sure that the food that kids want to eat winds up in tummies and not in trash? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going now to Francis calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Francis. Thanks again for your patience.
Hello. Actually, the comment I wanted to make is about what kids like in school. I find for personal experience that my children don't like their food at school. Therefore, most of what they get served is wasted. They throw it away. So I believe that more people inside the school should observe what is actually served and see what is thrown away and maybe work on making lists so that foods that are liked more can be served. And that
so Francis, I want to stop you for a second because I want you to tell me what foods your kids like and don't like. What's on the big, bad, awful, terrible, I'm not going to eat it list?
Well, sometimes these foods that are not cooked properly, like if they are served fish fillets, they're actually frozen pieces of fish that have been pre-cooked and they're warmed in the oven. And when they are served, they're undercooked and they taste terrible. So they end up throwing them away. Instead of being served fresh fruits, they're served fruits that have come out of a can when they could eat fresh pineapple, fresh papayas, or other fruits that are grown in Hawaii, things of that kind. My kids grew up eating fresh foods that I cook daily, that I buy fresh. And so sometimes it's more convenient for me that they eat at school, and I would expect them to be served good food since I'm paying for it. But
So what are you doing in your school? I mean, obviously you're not happy with it, but have you complained to the school?
I have, and...
How do they react when you complain about it?
They don't like it. They tell me to go talk to the people that work in the kitchen, but what can they do about it? They're not the ones placing the orders, and obviously they have to work with a budget. So the budget is what it is, and they order what they can afford. And
so what's your workaround for all of this? Are you just making more home lunches and not buying lunch at school, even when it's less convenient for you?
Exactly, yes. What we do, we make more home lunches. Or sometimes we miss that they didn't like their lunch on that day and they come home and they're really upset because they're hungry. So that, really works badly for us. And also, some things that I have observed, they serve, the little packets of milk. And sometimes they get that because they don't like anything else, but they drink a little bit and then they throw it away. Or they get like a whole huge banana that looks nice and fresh, but they don't like the banana, and so that also gets thrown away when it could have been put in a basket and given away, even to the personnel at school. I don't know. There could be so many ways to reuse it or to...
Well, and we talked about that a moment ago because several people have said, how come, this one place where there is all this food waste, why can't we, distribute that food to people who might need it? And it seems to be that the answers that come right around are, no, we can't. We're not allowed to do that. Issues of liability or concern for whatever reason. But that food is the one place. And we had Aloha Harvest in here last week in our first part of our conversation. They said they've asked, they've tried, they can't. And certainly, Mindy, you've tried over the years to ask why not. So we're not really getting a really substantive answer why not. It's just the fact that they're not able to do it for whatever reason. We need to find out concretely why, and we will.
Answer, and that should not be accepted by the public.
Francis, thanks so much for your call, and good luck with those home lunches. I hear you. Gabby calling us from Makawao.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Thanks for your patience, too. I know everybody has so much to say. We've got lots of callers, but go ahead.
Well, I'll be pretty quick. I just, my experience, I'm a mom, and I am now homeschooling some teenagers, so I'm kind of away from the school lunch slop. But basically, my experience was that the schools to get the money that they want, they check the box. So they get, okay, we're going to give everybody milk, we're going to give everybody canned peas, carrots, and whatever disgusting food, and that's going to be what they slop onto the plate. And
yeah, we've heard you say now slop twice. I take it that you're not really a big fan of cafeteria school food.
Because I was a kid growing up here, too. I was one of the people who had to have the slop on the plate, too, and I just was blown away by this as a kid, blown away as a parent when that finally happened. And I think that's really narrow thinking because they just put it on the plate. They even told me, my daughter is lactose intolerant, they said, well, just tell her to throw it away. They had
tell her to throw
her
it away.
The carton of milk, and she had to just throw it away. That's so stupid. In college, you get a salad bar, a fruit bar, whatever. I mean, the kid should have a choice.
Well, and in some schools, to be fair, that happens here, too. Anyway, Gabby, thanks so much. We've got some disagreement around the table. We want to talk a little bit about this. So is this thing with the milk, you know, you mentioned earlier that you have to have, Debbie, 3 out of the 5 food groups, and that the milk thing in some schools where they don't have to necessarily take the milk if there are another choice available. But you just heard what Gabby said. You know, kids handed milk. The daughter is lactose intolerant, and they tell her to throw it away.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things going on there. One is our sort of simple thinking. On the mainland, I know there's schools, there's districts that are offering alternatives to milk so that children can still get the protein and calcium that they need. So almond milk, soy milk as alternatives. And for whatever reason, Hawaii has continued the contract, which has the 2 types of milk, which is low-fat milk and the skim milk with chocolate.
Chocolate milk.
And added sugar. And I'll just add in real quick, it's the great math project to work on with those of you in schools who are measuring the amount of milk that you are collecting that's wasted. For us at Waikiki School with 300 lunches, it's approximately 10 cows a day that are being milked and it's being thrown away.
Oh, I mean,
yeah, milk is an incredible food, and it costs a huge amount of money to produce it and bring it here, and it's getting thrown away. Now, we can put it into a mulch pile. We can put it down the drain. We do have some ways of bioconverting some of that, but that's the holy grail. Milk is the hardest thing. Waste milk is the hardest thing to manage, and it sours, and it's –
it's
hard to manage,
and
it's
just
awful.
It's just tough stuff.
It's awful, and there's no reason that another thing they do on the mainland, say a milk dispenser, usually called the cow, and you go with a little paper cup and you get what you want.
That goes back to the take what you want what you take.
Yeah.
Going now to Linda calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Linda.
Hi.
Welcome to Town Square.
Can you hear me?
We can, yes.
Thank you. I have 2 quick questions. One is I don't understand how children who are on free and reduced payment for school lunch can be allowed to throw away the food. You know, I think part of the problem is that they don't own it. They don't pay for it, so they don't value it. And yet, I think that speaks to the same experience that man was talking about in terms of growing the food, where they own it and they're vested in it. So I think that's part of the breakdown and why people disrespect the food that's given to them.
Well, I think that could be said about all age groups, that somehow we have a very consumerist idea toward food. I don't like it. I don't want it. Well, I'll just toss it. And you see people throw food away all the time, and not just little kids.
Yeah, I just think that if there could be some kind of system where they feel like they have some value or some say.
Well, yeah, that's a sweat equity part. What was your second comment?
My other second comment was that other places, I'm sure, have figured this out, and we should just learn from them. There should be some way to outreach to other school districts and other states and other communities and you know, not have to reinvent the wheel.
Well, we're getting lots of nods around the table, so I think you're quite right. The question is you've got to have not only the information, but people who are willing to listen to that information and then act on it, and that seems to be where some of this hang-up is. Before we have to hang up for the evening, we're going to go over to Mark calling us from Manoa. Aloha, Mark. Welcome to Town Square.
Hello. Yeah, I have a question. I don't know if it was already addressed early in the show, but why is it actually the job of the school to provide lunch in the first place?
That's a very good question. And I just watched Debbie Milliken's face sort of light up. So why? Why? When he asked the question, why should the school have to provide lunch in the first place?
Now you're going to have to remember these facts. It goes way back. I believe during the Depression when many children were coming to school and were not being fed at home. So there's a real underlying reason for it, and you know, it's understandable.
It's compassion. It's trying
it has to
feed children
right.
who are hungry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But at the same time, I think what we're getting right now, this perfect storm, is also the our society's view of food as being cheap. And it's only happening in America, by the way. The rest of the world pays more from their income as a percentage on food than we do in the United States.
Well, and that argument is one that we've taken just hours to talk about. The fact that most of us were raised in an era of cheap food.
Absolutely.
And lately, it's not so cheap. And so you have a lot of people looking at how much they're spending for food and saying, my gosh, that's a lot more than we used to spend on food. And then you sort of have to look at what everybody else around the world is spending for food and understand that there is a historical reason why we thought food would and should be so cheap. That's a whole other hour. We could do another one on those. But as we're closing this hour out, looking at where we are right now today with food waste in Hawaii, if there were a couple of things that you would want our audience to walk away and really think about as we're in the summer session, and some schools will be going back into session come August, that's not too far away. A lot of lunch planning is being done now, whether it's going to be for home lunch or whether it's going to be for, you know, here's your money to buy lunch at school, my child. What would you want them to know, Debbie? Or think about at least over the next little while?
I think there was a caller that just came on the line. Was it Linda who mentioned about learning from other places? And unfortunately, there's some things that we just simply cannot change, and that really has to do with the USDA guidelines for reimbursable meals. There's nothing we can do to touch those portion sizes, I don't think, unless we all have collectively enough to lobby against the meat lobbyers and the dairy lobbyers who are keeping those items on the plate. There's really not a lot we can do. But what we mentioned earlier, I think there's a few things that individual schools can do to try to make a difference. And I think it's about education or encouraging our DOE school food services to be more creative with presenting the food as far as offering more choices, encourage more salad bars. As far as I understand, there are no salad bars in DOE schools, or maybe there are only a few, but it's not across the board in any means. So I think what our listener parents can be doing and teachers is really knocking on that door with school food services, I think.
And it may be because we had some charter schools. I'm thinking of Wailea School that had the salad bar. But regardless of that part of it, you're really saying is the portion part until we start to look at the how those portions continue to be perpetuated and the why of it. We're going to be stuck with the portions. If we're stuck with the portions, at least make them really attractive and edible for the kids. And also maybe, as we talked about earlier in the hour, make sure lunch happens maybe a little later after recess so kids come in and they're hungry and there will be less waste. I mean,
absolutely.
There are things that we can massage, you're saying, right now, and there are things
right.
that we cannot.
And absolutely. And the thing with the note that the snacks, we've got kids eating snacks, so parents, you know, encourage your children not to eat those snacks either.
Brianna, a couple thoughts from you?
I would agree with Debbie. I would say starting with changing, you know, first going towards policy and also going towards how can we alter to try to make less food waste. But I would say simultaneously doing what we're doing now and doing composting, doing vermicast, trying to work from both ends and working everywhere in the middle, because you're not going to have it change tomorrow, but you can at least make progress from both sides.
That's the point.
I would say one last thing would be just change the way we look at waste. I think that we look at waste as something that's not valuable, but just looking at it as a resource.
Yes,
all right,
and that's
you got 30 seconds, kiddo.
Waste is the greatest resource we have. We can learn to use it. We have the technology. We can do it. We are asking the parents and the teachers to support composting in the schools, waste reduction, and we're going before the school board to ask for support, and we hope they'll join us there.
You can be sure this is not the last conversation we're going to have about food waste and what kind of food happens in school. But for the moment, we have to say goodbye. Thanks so much to Mindy Jaffe, Brianna Rose, and to Debbie Milliken for being here. And you too, with your good questions and comments. We will be back with you next week on Town Square. And I'll see you tomorrow morning on The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. Aloha.